such a hard thing to see when parents go through their kids being drug addicts, because I mean, they don't understand why, right? Like, why would you continue to tear everybody away from you when it's not even a good feeling?
Hello, and welcome to the Plant Prescription Podcast. This podcast is all about helping you live a longer, happier, and healthier life. We will be featuring conversations with great minds to inspire you to reach your ultimate potential. My name is Muzammil Ahmed. I'm a medical student with a master's in psychology, certification in nutrition, and a bachelor's in business.
And my name is Cass Warbeck. I'm a medical student with a bachelor of science in health and fitness physiology, and I'm also a plant-fueled Muay Thai fighter. We are both plant-based lifestyle advocates who are passionate about spreading positivity, optimizing health, and promoting sustainability. Hello, everyone. Welcome back to the podcast. I'm really excited to introduce a very special guest today, my partner, Tyler Gatto. He is quite an interesting story, to say the least, and we are so happy that he was willing to come on the podcast to share his journey. Tyler is a Muay Thai fighter like myself, who fights out of Silverback Martial Arts in Calgary, Alberta. For those of you who don't know, Muay Thai is a style of stand-up fighting, similar to kickboxing, except you can throw elbows and knees. It's pretty vicious. But before Tyler ever stepped foot in the fight ring, he had his own personal challenges to overcome. He has fought with drug addiction his entire life, yet today he's over 2.5 years clean and he believes finding martial arts saved his life. He sat down with us to share his experiences and offer advice and support for those actively struggling with addiction. On top of all this, Tyler adopted a vegan diet over a year ago now, and he shares with us how going plant-based has influenced his recovery and affected his life as an athlete. Lastly, just a fair warning that this episode contains mature content, but Tyler has a fascinating story and it is well worth a listen. We hope you all enjoy it. And as always, we would love to hear your thoughts. We welcome you to reach out to us on Instagram. You can find our handles in the show notes for this episode.
Hi, Tyler. Thank you so much for being on our show. We're super excited to have you. Would you like to give a quick intro and then we'll get into your story?
Yeah, sure. My name's Tyler and I come from a small town in Newfoundland called Stephenville. And I'm 35 years old and I battled with addiction for the better part of my life. And I just want to tell you guys a little bit about my story and where I come from and how I ended up where I am today.
That's awesome. Thanks for joining us. We're super excited to talk to you. Can you just maybe share with our listeners what your first experience with drugs was like? How old were you and what was it?
Yeah, sure. No problem. You know, I was a young age. I was about 12 years old and everybody seemed to be getting into booze and a lot of drinking was going down because, like I say, I come from a small town and there's not much to do, so there's not much crime around, but people like to get into drugs and booze at a young age. So when this was going on, you know, I didn't want much to do with the booze. And then my friends talked about how we could get this oil. And it's just, you know, THC oil. I hope so. But, you know, we were told that it was cut with motor oil and whatever. So, but you never know, right? But it was oil and I was just 12 years old. And the weird thing was for me was that, like, I wanted to know instantly how to handle it myself, how to do it up, how to smoke it in different ways. And I wanted to take it and go by myself. So, you know, at the time that didn't bother me a bit. I wasn't thinking like that was a problem. I was just thinking like, I just wanted to escape. I just wanted to get away from the guys. Cause I just didn't think it was a big deal. And to being just 12 years old and smoking dope and not really liking drinking, I used to, in fact, just pretend I was drunk just to fit in with the rest of the crowd and try and pick up the girls. You know, the drunk guys were getting the girls. So I like pour my booze out, go smoke dope and be like, yeah, I'm wasted, man. Start falling all over the place. But, you know, yeah, that's how it all got started for me at about 12 years old when I started my first drug. And it was, in fact, like oil.
So it's safe to say like your first experience with it was different than other people that were just doing it for fun.
Yes. Like, absolutely. But I didn't realize that, right? You know what I mean? Everybody else was doing it to be cool, to fit in, to like puff it back and not inhale. And here I am like by myself in my shed, like doing it up, watching myself smoke it, pretending I was like Snoop Dogg and some shit. And I'm all by myself. And I just like, I just, my buddies would say too, they're like, I can't believe Tyler, like he throws in on drugs with us and he takes his little bit that he got and puts it in his own little vial and goes on home. Like,
that's crazy. So you said you were doing this when you were 12. Were your buddies around your age or a bit older who were also doing it?
My buddies were my age, probably a year older, two years older, and we were all pretty much just getting into it, experimenting, right? You know.
So is this like a cultural thing over there, or was it just your group of friends that did that?
No, you know what it was? It was a lot of people. My group of friends were definitely younger, definitely a lot younger than most. But it was a thing that was going on, and the good thing was I didn't know how to get hard drugs, or I didn't know what hard drugs was, because I come from a small town, and with my age going up through high school and stuff, there was no such thing as hard drugs for us. It was just weed and oil.
So you know what I mean? What would be, I guess, just for listeners that might not know, what would be considered a hard drug compared to, I guess, softer drugs?
I would say, to me, it would be a soft drug, but ecstasy. Probably if you're moving on to ecstasy, I would consider that soft, which is totally messed up when somebody would consider ecstasy soft, because I would tell our listeners that, no, it is not soft whatsoever. It's the hardest thing ever. But I mean, you know, it's one thing to be on a party, and it's another thing to be on a on an escape, right? On somewhere to be like by yourself and just away from everybody else in your own head. Like, you know what I mean? I'm thinking everything's great and I'm coming up with ideas how to be a better hockey player, you know, all this stuff, because I was always an athlete and I always played sports. So I always said that, like, you know, drugs wouldn't take me back. It wouldn't take me away from it, because I was consumed into something that I thought was just for fun. My idea, I thought that it was okay because everybody else was doing it and all these great hockey players were doing it and great athletes, they smoked dope and stuff. So for me, but I'm doing it every day as a kid, but I'm waking up in the mornings, I'm doing it by myself and stuff like that. But I always thought that it was just okay, you know?
So was this mostly just marijuana at this point that you were doing?
Yes, at this time it was just, like I say, as a kid it escalated through, and like, you know what I mean, I got into ecstasy later. It escalated into ecstasy when I was like 19 years old. Like I say, my entire high school I was unable to come across any type of drugs that was anything more than weed or oil. And then becoming 19 years old and getting introduced to ecstasy, I just thought it was the greatest thing in the world, because it was a drug that makes you love everything and want to talk to people and want to be the friendliest guy ever and talk on the phone. So it's still a party. It's still a good time and I'm still feeling good. And you know, I still don't realize that I'm a drug addict and I'm a full blown drug addict at this time. And I don't have a clue. I think I'm just with the rest of my friends. You know what I mean?
So I have a question. I'm just curious. I'm guessing that your family was aware of this, that you were, you know, as a kid, you were doing all this, or, like, I'm just curious about, you know, that side of things.
Yes. So, you know, at age 12, like I say, like, it's funny, like my mom like drove by me. I was just going down the road on my skateboard, just like with, I had a little bit of weed in my pocket that I thought was weed, and I had a little bit of oil in the other pocket, and she pulled up next to me and she's just like, the cops called. They said you were in the truck with a drug dealer. And then when I got in the car with mom, you know, she hauled out my hand and what I had in it. She's like, you moron, that's grass from the ground. I'm like, well, you know, that's how I figured out what real weed was. So, you know, my mom knew at a young age that I was in the car at a 12 year old age. She was aware that I was in the car with drug dealers, like 18, 19 years old, you know? So that puts a scary thought in her head right there. And it prevented me from going away for a lot of things. Like, for instance, you know, for my mom just to send me away to go for a hockey camp, if I was to get accepted to go try for a hockey team at a young age, there's no way she could let that happen, because it's just too nerve-wracking to know her boy, 12 years old, in the car with drug dealers. Now I'm not going to send him on his own because he needs to be babysat by his mom, right?
So your mom and your parents did everything they could to basically put you on a better path.
Best parents ever. Like I say, if we forward it to me being in rehab, I spent three stints in rehab But you know what I mean? I'm in there and it's like, I'm not meant to be in there because I'm sitting around in a group and people's stories are so tragic. And they're like, yeah, so I had to smoke crack to escape from this horrific thing that happened to me. And I'm like, man, I just come from the greatest thing ever. I just like adrenaline.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
So you just mentioned you were in rehab 3 times. Do you mind telling your listeners or your age, I guess, you know, when was this? Just so...
Okay, yeah, sure. So yeah. So my first stint in rehab, I was 28 years old.
Okay.
And what happened there was I failed a drug test at work. So I was working for a company called Finning, a big company, and I had everything going for me in the rest kind of way. And I had everything figured out. And I was majorly addicted to coke at this time. And I was fully aware of it, right? At this time, I knew I was an addict.
Can we just go back a second? Just when did you realize you were an addict? When
I realized I was an addict at about 24 years old. When I started having all my friends come to my house and be like, I don't get why you would stay here by yourself when you could come out and drink and party with us and do this. Why are you staying here? So then I started to realize that I'm a drug addict, right? But I didn't care too much to do anything about it. I just wanted to keep getting paid the big money and tell myself, because it was cocaine at the time before I went to rehab for the first time, the hardest drug I done was cocaine, soft powder. So for anybody that like don't know like the graduation, how you go from drugs, how it gets from, you know, best to worst or worst to best, whichever way you want to put it. You know what I mean? When you get the soft powder, there's many, many people that function on high level lives that do this on every now and then on the weekends. Once a month or something like that, they go out and do some soft powder. So I'm thinking it's not that big of an issue because it's not like I shoot up heroin and it's not like I smoke crack. So I got myself convinced I'm a drug addict, but it's okay because I only do the drugs that all my friends do anyway.
So always justifying it.
Always justifying how it's okay. And so going for a drug test at work, every time I'd go for a drug test at work, I'd have it all figured out. I'd have fake pee for my freezer. I used to get my buddy's girlfriend's pee and freeze it. She hates me. She can't stand it. Every time I'd call her, she'd say, no more pee, Tyler, no more pee. I'm like, man, if your daughter got the pee, just hold a cup under her. Just don't mind me. But you know what I'm saying? So I spent the better part like trying to beat the system as a drug addict, still holding on to my job, still making top dollar, and still figuring out that my life was okay because I'm doing fine. I got a job and I got a roof over my head. I got a house. You know what I mean? But the only reason why all this is staying together is because I got this loving mother who's afraid to let her son go. You know what I mean? So. I went to do this drug test and I actually drank the drink. I went to the cannabis store and I was like, I need to buy a drink to clean my system out. You know what I mean? Just one of those bong shop stores. And I drank the drink. And then on the way to the drug test, I actually threw up out my window in my truck. And I was like, I wonder if it's still going to work. And then I took the drug test and the girl come out and she let me know, you tested positive for whatever. And so I was like, okay, I'm gonna pretend it's not that big of a problem, this and that. And then I heard from a friend actually who told me, she said, you could get fired if you say, you know, it's not a problem, you're an occasional user, but you can't get fired if you tell them the truth, right? So then I said, I'm not gonna tell them the full truth. I'm just gonna say I just smoke weed because that's all I failed the drug test for. And instantly as I went into rehab, you know, work got offered to put me in rehab or to fire me. They're like, hey buddy, you can go to rehab and get randomly drug tested for 2 years or you can hit the high road. So I'm like, definitely I'll go to rehab. So I went to rehab and I initially lied, right? I said, you know what, I'm not going to tell them about the cocaine because that'll get me in more trouble at work. And on day two, I pretty much caved in rehab and I said, I got to tell you guys something. I only lied about a few things on that card you asked me to fill out. I never, you know what I mean? I don't smoke crack and I don't smoke meth or nothing like that, but I do cocaine and that's my real problem.
that's my drug of choice, right?
That probably took a lot for you to share that and open up.
Oh, it was like I was just sat in my room in rehab and I was like, it's going to get me fired. I shouldn't. But I was like, I'll never get the problem taken care of if I got to keep lying here, right? Because every time they asked me a question, I would have to say like, oh, so I've never done cocaine. Yeah, but like you say about weed, right? And the people in rehab are like, this guy's in here for weed? What the hell, right? You know what I mean? So I came out and told the truth and it worked out to the best of my advantage. I mean, I went down a long, hard road after that, but you know what I mean? Work called back and they said, well, not only are we going to keep him on board, but we're going to pay for him to stay in rehab for another 20 days and get him some more help because he clearly needs a little more. Right. So this battle just went on and I just went into rehab and, for the wrong reasons. And if there's one advice I can give to somebody, man, is to, if you're battling an addiction and you're going to go to rehab because your mom wants you to go and she's going to pay your insurance if you go to rehab and you're going to get taken care of if you go to rehab, you got to go because you're down and out and you got nowhere else to turn and you just want to get better. Not for somebody else. Like, I realized that I couldn't go to rehab for my daughter. I couldn't go for my mother. I couldn't go for anybody. I had to go for myself and come to a point that I really, really wanted to get better, you know?
So for listeners, the ones who might be battling with something you have, can you just discuss why it took you so long to consider rehab? Like why, you know, like how were you able to still function fine and not see how you needed help? And then what suddenly triggered for you to be like, okay, maybe I do need help?
So after getting out of rehab, I went through this like probably 90 days clean. I managed to get 90 days clean and thought I had everything knocked and everything was going to be great. And then it's just the one thing that a drug addict will do is keep telling yourself that it's going to be different this time. It's going to be different this time, right? It's going to be different. So
I think I was going to say, not to interrupt you, but that might lead into, can you explain how it all of a sudden changed from being like doing cocaine was fun and enjoyable to something that the experience wasn't so positive, yet you just couldn't stop anyway?
Yeah, it's a crazy thing to get to a point of like, you know what I mean? Like to a point just to want to actually give up and give in and not care about the next $200 that you're going to spend and not care about what happens in the consequences in the end of destruction of your life and of destruction of your family, destruction of your friends and everybody just quitting on you. And because, like I would say, my friends would ask me, why would you sit here and do this to yourself when you could come out with us and have a good time? Because you can't understand, as being what somebody in addiction would say is a normal person, is a normal person, would never understand why a guy would continuously spend $200 over and over and over again when he's getting nothing out of it. Like, you know what I mean? My buddy said, like, do you even order hookers? And I'm like, no. I just go into complete psychosis and I think somebody's coming to get me. Wow. You know what I mean? So
can you elaborate on that a little bit more? What's like,
yeah, I'll tell you what happens to, what a real crack cocaine user or a methamphetamine addict, something happens through a time in your buzzsaw where you start seeing and hearing things that are not there. And I mean, I'm after standing outside my front door of my house and I'm on the other side of it. And I think somebody's on the other side with a gun coming to steal my friggin' $100 worth of drugs I got or whatever I got. And this could go on for 4 hours. And I truly, truly believe there's a dude standing out there. I could hear him planning the attack and stuff like that. And it goes beyond. And then I'm like, my buddy deciphered through this. And he's like, so then what will you do? So I'll take another line to get more going because I'll start to lose that adrenaline rush. And I'll start to realize that there's nobody there. And this is all not happening. So then I'm like, so confused. I'm like, so am I addicted to adrenaline? Do I like my heart to be rushing? Of course I am. I don't like to say I suffer with, let's just say I live with like a high ADHD, right? You know, I'm always moving. I'm very, very hyper. So I love adrenaline. I love being in the air on snowboard. I love adrenaline from the rush of it. So I get this rush out of thinking somebody's coming to get me, and it turns that real that I almost have a heart attack. And you know what I mean? And then it's like, all I say that I want to do is do drugs without that rush happening. But yet I keep doing drugs to keep that rush going. Mm-hmm. So it's the most confusing thing. Can you imagine a mom and dad hearing that with their son being a drug addict? Like, it's such a hard thing to see when parents go through their kids being drug addicts, because I mean, they don't understand why, right? Like, why would you continue to tear everybody away from you when it's not even a good feeling? And I mean, you know what I mean? The funny thing is that, like, it's just for a kick at the start. It all started for kicks.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? For most people, not for me. It never, ever started for kicks. It all started for adrenaline, for my heart to be pounding. The first time I took that hit of ecstasy, you know what I mean? My heart was pounding and it was skipping beats. And then I raced for that.
How old were you when you had ecstasy for the first time?
19.
19.
19 years old, yes.
You remember how old you were when you first had cocaine?
Yes, about 21 years old or something like that. You know, I came home from a hockey camp where I got introduced to ecstasy, and I fell in love. And then when I came home, one of my buddies were at the bar, and it was never like to see cocaine in my town. Steve Malufaland, he's like, "Do you want a lion, Tyler?" And I was like, "Yeah." And then I just, you know what I mean? I fell in love with that rush, and always fiending for that rush. And then over time and time again, as I'm in counseling, and counselors are saying to me, "So are you hiding something from us? Like, were you sexually abused? Did you deal with any of this stuff?" And I'm like, this counselor girl was so convinced. She's like, "You had to be traumatized." And I'm like, "I'm pretty sure I lived an entirely awesome life and my parents were so good to me. I just like adrenaline." She's like, "Yeah, sweetheart, it's beyond that," right?
I think that's a good point to bring up, because so many people think that drug addicts all come from this background. They don't realize it can happen to privileged people as well. They don't realize that anyone can fall into this state.
No,
I was just going to say that I think there's a couple things just to highlight here that are important, right? One, you got introduced to it at such a young age. So you're not, you know, a lot of people get introduced to it a bit later than that. You got introduced to everything at the age of 12. So you're not thinking very logically to begin with. You're a child. So your body's like used to it anyway by the time you get to a point where you can make a logical decision against it. And then another interesting thing you mentioned was how you're like, you're very ADHD. And I think that's a very important thing to mention, because a lot of research has shown that people who tend to be more ADHD are more prone to addiction. So that is, I'm glad you brought that up, because that is very important. You know, there are a lot of people who may have gone through a trauma or something else, but you had different predisposing factors that played a huge role in your journey to ending up where you did.
Yes, for sure. It was, and being with ADHD got something to do too with my hyper and my adrenaline fiendness. I kind of take consequences out the window. For instance, if I see a note when I was a kid from my parents, like, "If you go outside, we're gonna tan your ass and you're grounded for the rest of your life. Seriously, if you go outside." And I just read the note, and all of a sudden my buddy calls me to go for a round of golf, and I no longer care about the consequences. I just don't care. I'm just like, that goes out the window. So then carrying on throughout my life, I no longer care about the consequences about burning through all this money. I no longer care about the consequences about burning through my body on another 8-ball, right? You know what I mean?
You know, it's interesting you say all that, because I am like, you know, you're sharing this. I just want to mention, I was also diagnosed with ADHD and I have had it. So I can relate to a lot of the things you're saying, especially like as a child, not always realizing the importance of consequences and just ignoring them, and your parents being constantly furious about that, right? Them being like, I told you if you do this, it's going to happen. But your mind just doesn't grasp that idea. And it has taken so long for me to train that. Even now, many times, my brain just doesn't automatically do it. It's like a train thing that I have to put so much effort on, where some people, it's just automatic for them. So I can like relate to you on that.
That's very awesome, man. And you know what else? It's good that because you obviously used it to your advantage because you're currently a medical student. You know what I'm saying? So it's you. Like I got a friend with ADHD too. And like I say to him all the time, I'm like, it's awesome that, you know, your ADHD made you into an electrician and it made you get stuff done, this yep. and that. And it can work against you. It can work with you. Like my buddy says to me, well, it's wicked that it made you an athlete, right? I spent my whole life in high school staring out a window with a teacher sitting next to me trying to mm-hmm. convince me to do work and just unable to pay attention to school because my mind, if I don't love it, I got nothing to do with it.
Oh, I can relate.
Yeah.
But then if you
I'm glad you like medical yeah. school and you like being a doctor because...
But I can totally relate. When you
yeah.
love something,
that's
it's
awesome. So,
it's like a pain. It's like almost impossible for you to get it done. But when you love something and you're passionate, it's like you, that's all you want to do. For me, it's been like health stuff and starting a podcast. And for you, the segue that, you know, you just mentioned, you being an athlete, that's been one of your passions. So do you just want to share a bit about that as well?
Yeah, for sure. I'll say, you know, being an athlete growing up and stuff, I was given so much from my parents and stuff, the opportunities for hockey. No kids are given the opportunity for hockey compared to what they should be, the percentage of kids allowed to play hockey because it's so expensive. And then the better hockey you play, the more expensive it gets, the more hard it is on the parents' pockets. So I was always obsessed with fighting though. And I was a bit of an aggressive kid. And I was just obsessed with fighting and I just the sport of it, really the sport of it. And, you know, my parents would never let me get into it too much or something. I asked to join karate and whatnot, the karate down there. And they're like, no, you know, just keep them out of it. And I just always wanted to get into fighting and Muay Thai in particular, you know. So I going to rehab my second time is when I found Muay Thai, and that really changed my life because all the sports I played, I always thought that I would lay off the drugs and take my sport serious, whatever it would be, soccer, hockey, snowboarding. I always wanted to be an athlete for a living. I didn't want to be a drug addict. Right? Mm-hmm. I wanted to be an athlete when I grew up, man, not mm-hmm. a fucking crackhead. Like I wanted to play on a hockey team and I wanted my job to be in the best shape I could possibly be in at all times. So, you know, I just couldn't fit. I'm like, man, how come I like playing my junior hockey career as like this just floozy year? Like I thought I loved hockey and I do. I love hockey. I love it so much. But I was so confused. I'm like, if I love hockey, how come I'm doing drugs in between the periods? How come I'm like on such a party and just such a unprofessional way to treat treat what you want to be as your profession? You know what I mean? And then finally, when I got Muay Thai, I stopped everything else. I put everything on the back burner. And I was just like, I'm going to learn how to fight, man. I'm going to like, I didn't have no fighting background whatsoever. My town is totally insane. So I didn't do any street fighting. Like before my first fight, my coach is like, so you've been in a few street fights, right? You seem like a guy who's been in a lot. And I'm like, buddy, I'm telling you right now, not that many, like four. So yeah, you know, when I found Muay Thai and I was just like, this is amazing. I got something that I don't want to get rich from it. I don't want to get famous from it. I want it to be my profession and I want to treat it as a professional and like I'm getting paid for it. So I just took out my pension from work, you know, and I pretended that that was paying me for fighting. And I took out my pension, a huge stack of money. And I just started going to the gym 6 hours a day and training Muay Thai. And I fell in love. I fell in love with this art, with gaining on it and with being a profession. And, you know, I thought that would, that would never let me relapse again. But little do you know, like before my first ever fight, like 3 weeks before, I just relapsed. And that's what happens to a drug addict. Before the most important time in your life is the time that you'll relapse. You could pull clean days together, have 90, and all of a sudden have to go for a court meeting. You got to be at court the next day. The night before, an alcoholic gets wasted and don't show up for court. And they're like, why did I not drink 89 days before? You know what I mean? It's just such a confusing thing. So I thought, I was like, now I got Muay Thai. I got a fight coming up. It's the real deal. I'll never smoke crack again. I definitely will never smoke crack again. And 3 weeks before, you know, I relapsed. And then I lied to my coach and I said it was just gummy bears, right? He was like, he asked me, he said, so man, you've been away for a couple of days there for a week or so. Is everything okay? Like, I'm like, oh yeah, it's just eating a few candies. He's like, so you just relapsed on gummy bears is what you're saying? I'm like, yeah, man, that's gummy bears. But that night of the fight, I think me and him both knew it wasn't gummy bears. You know what I'm saying? Like, yeah. It was such a crazy experience to go through that first fight and to still go through with it after relapsing, and then to be like pulled through the ringer by this young guy, you know what I mean? Just like, and just exhausted after the fight, totally exhausted, like from adrenaline and stuff and hanging over the ropes. And then I thought I was done, and I thought I had was so embarrassed and stuff like that. And I thought I wouldn't bounce back from this. I was like, I'm definitely going to go relapse now. And I went home, and my roommate that lived with me, this guy brought me back, man. He's like, I was sitting in a chair, and I'll never forget this. And, you know, me and this guy spent a lot of time together. I love this guy so much. And he looks at me and he's like, man, if you can you stand up and give me a hug? You know, you just fought a full rules Muay Thai fight, man. He's like, how many people could say they did that? So I stood up, gave him a hug, and he's like, go back to the gym Monday. And that's what I did. And I don't think if I had that guy there, that I don't know. I don't think my life would have ended up being the same, man. You know what I mean? It was a real, real eye opener to realize that that was the farthest thing from embarrassing ever. That was the craziest, most courageous thing I've ever done, is get in the ring with a real trained fighter when I started training Muay Thai at, you know, 33 years old. So
I was just going to say, I just want to jump in here and paint the picture a little bit better, because a lot of people think like, oh, it's just amateur Muay Thai. It's just like an amateur sport. It's an amateur Muay Thai fight is intense. Like, we're not just talking like a little fight, like club in a gym. No. It's like, it was,
they don't mention the smoke machines and the casino and stuff.
No, we're
like
talking
that.
Like walkout music. People are paying tickets. It's in a casino. There's lights. Everyone's looking at you. Friends and family come out. Like, it's an insane thing. And it's a huge adrenaline rush. And it's, most people just talk about stepping into the ring. Getting into the ring is another thing whatsoever. And like, even though they're like, I think amateur fights are only 2 minutes long. It's the longest 2 minutes. Three 2 minute rounds, but it's the longest 2 minutes of your life. It's an insane experience, and not many people can say they've done that. So getting in the ring,
the worst thing ever is like, my coach kept telling me, he's like, so soon as the fight starts, your adrenaline's going to drop. You're going to have no gas tank and you're barely going to move your arms, but that's okay. And I'm like, not me. I'm going to be bobbing, weaving, like Muhammad Ali in there, right? And all of a sudden the bell rang and I was like, shit, I can't move my arms or legs. I'm stuck. I'm totally stuck. I'm gassed. But you know what I mean? Going through that was something that that brought me to where I'm to today. And I'm just so happy. I'm so happy with where I ended up to for after battling addiction for, let's say, 20 years, you know what I mean? Ever since I've been 15 years old, I've been battling this addiction and battling this who I didn't know who I was. I never knew who I was. I always thought I was just a guy who liked to have heart-to-hearts on a huge Coke buzz. You know what I mean? But really, I'm the guy that likes to have all of his friends doing drugs, because some people have the privilege to do drugs. And they can go out and have fun on a weekend and go back and see their wives and their family
just
again.
Just clear, we're not endorsing drugs on this podcast.
No, no. But I'm just saying, I've been taken away from that. I've been taken away from the privilege to have a drink. Even though I'm not an alcoholic, I can't have a drink because it leads me back to my addiction and it leads me back to being alone, ashamed, and just full of guilt, full of guilt. So finding Muay Thai, and what brought me to Muay Thai was AA brought me to Muay Thai Alcoholics Anonymous. But it's funny because AA saved my life, but then I had to leave AA to stay sober because I couldn't figure out why I was continuously relapsing in AA. And it's because I was taking all the bad out of the program that I could possibly take out of it. And then I would go relapse and want to come back and show attitude or whatever and gain 5 days clean time and come back to the rooms and get a pat on the back for being sober, right? That's why I went to AA. It was a crutch for me. AA is the most beautiful thing ever and it saves people's lives. But for me, it was a crutch for me to lean on to think it was okay to relapse because it was confusing for me to come to AA and them to be like, you know, not to bastardize AA whatsoever because it's a beautiful thing, but people are telling me like, okay, get ready to get humble. You come in here, you get humble. Does anybody have 1 day clean time? We're all gonna clap for you and give you a big hug and you're gonna come up and get a chip. I'm like, man, like I'm not the smartest dude ever, but this seems the opposite of humble. So I couldn't be humble and be in the fellowship at AA because it just, I couldn't understand how I can go up and take this chip and everybody to clap for me because I said it. Because I just said, and you know what I mean? I said I'm sober 30 days. So give me a present, give me a hug, and everybody in this room clap for me because that's what's going to happen. So the fact that I was even thinking that way, I was like, I have to leave AA. I can no longer be in this fellowship, but AA gave me a new way of life because it gave me the 12 steps of Alcoholics Anonymous. So I just switched AA over to a God. And instead of like, you know what I mean? Telling people when I'm sober and stuff like that, I just tell my girlfriend. You know, actually, she tells me how long I'm sober for or whatever, and we can celebrate. But the thing is, some people, if they didn't have that room to go to and take that chip, there's just that world out there that there's nothing left but to go back to your drug of choice, to go back to that escape, because it's such a beautiful thing to have the fellowship and this and that. But I just find when the clicks get started and the crews get started, and I'm continuously told that I'm only equal because that person telling me that they're equal to me is just as close to the next drink as I am or whatever, right? But I'm like, I just see it as a person judging the entire room or whatever. They're like, this person is going to run the meeting, so he's going to sit up at the front desk and he's going to decide who gets to share. He's going to point out and say who shares this and that. And I was like, oh man, this is every time I just come home and bitch about AA, bitch about the rooms, talk about this one and that one. And it's all my own doing. It's my own mental health. It's my own issues and stuff. I'm like, so why do I keep doing it? And because I'm told that that's the only way. This is the only way that I got is the way of these rooms. So I'm like, it's either this or die. So that's what I thought. It was either stay in the fellowship of AA or die. But then I realized that I can still be a member of Alcoholics Anonymous, but I don't have to be a member of the fellowship. So I don't have to go to rooms and I don't have to take cakes. I don't have to do this and do that. So I found a sponsor who I could trust and who I thought was really out just to help other people and not trying to show how cool he is by helping other people and get laid out of it. You know what I mean? That's what I would see. Like, I would see people coming up to help me in the rooms, and I'd be like, I just see this guy looking over at that pretty girl being like, does this chick see me helping this dude? And you know what I mean? When it came to that point, and that's all I'm seeing out of it, I got to find something else. So I, you know, I found something else. I found a way to live by the 12 steps of Alcoholics Anonymous and continue to do the 12 steps of Alcoholics Anonymous minus the hard work. You know what I mean? The fact there's some steps where you got to write stuff out and stuff, write out your fears and sexual conducts and this and that. And I'm like, this is all the stuff that confuses my mind and takes me back to relapse. I'm like, I don't know what to even do here. So I'm like, do I really have to do this? Or can I just live by the 12 steps of Alcoholics Anonymous, try to be a good person, try to live one day at a time, and just leave it at that and still be sober without going to the rooms? And I can't. I realized, you know what I mean? I can be sober and I can do it that way.
That's amazing. I love that you shared all that. Just for our listeners and for my own curiosity. So Cassie, your girlfriend who's with us right now, the host, the co-host, when did you guys meet in this entire journey?
Me and Cassie met in this journey throughout. Cassie was a friend of mine throughout my first coming to the gym. That's where we met when I first came to the gym.
So I've trained at this gym for years prior to personal Tyler trainer. Ever walking in the doors. I was a personal trainer here. I fought for Paul Tsoukas. I trained under there, and Tyler's rehab just happened to be within walking distance of the gym. So he walked in one day and
I'll tell you what, I walked in and said anybody else would be insane. Like, this is actually, I kept this to myself, but I walked in the gym and I seen like on the wall a picture of this like coach when he used to fight, and he's like in a standing split kick, and then there's a picture of three other fighters including Cassie with her arm raised up, and I'm like looking on the wall and I'm like, I'm going to be on this wall, I'm going to go out with that chick, and that coach is going to walk me out to fights, and I'm going to walk that girl out to her fights. And all of it actually happened.
<That's> it's insane.
So when was this? How long ago was this?
I'll leave you answer that.
Yeah, so oh man. Trouble. I think we say we've been dating for 2 years now. So we met probably like maybe 8 months prior to that. So we were really close friends for the longest time. Mm-hmm. So I was in the audience for his very first fight. And then it was pretty much after his first fight. His first fight was in September. And then I think it was like the new year, January, February, we really started training together a lot. Like, we would make plans to come in on Sunday together and just hit pads. And it just kind of went from there. Like, we just enjoyed training together and working together. And we started doing jiu-jitsu and doing everything together and kind of just progressed from that.
Yeah, yeah, for sure. And it was, she was been in my corner since long before. Like, I didn't ever think she'd actually go out with me, right? I thought I was just kind of a project, you know what I mean? So she's like just had my back since the start. So I felt very comfortable with Cassie sitting down with her in the gym. And I told her, like, I'm like, yeah, nobody knows this, but I just stay down the road. I'm actually in a rehab. I live in a rehab just down the road there. So, you know, she got to know a little bit about me. So me and Cassie were very close for about like a full year before we actually like, you know, started going out. But it's been just having her and the rest of my fight team and my coaches in my corner to the point of beyond recognition that I could even think, because I thought I would have this coach and this fight team that just kind of wanted me to fight, and they were going to be so disappointed when I went relapse, because obviously being in the lifestyle I was in, I would go missing from the gym all the time, right? The running joke is, I love Muay Thai, see you in a month, right? So, yeah, we would, you know, when I would come back from being missing, I would be welcome with arms wide open. It'd be like, hey, Tyler, man, we're not worried about where you're at for your next fight or where you're at with your training. We're just worried about your mental health and make sure you're physically okay and stuff like that. And I just want to make sure you're all right. And I'm like, that's awesome, man. I thought I was going to come in here and be like, where have you been? How's your training going? Like, you know, I got a fight lined up for you. And like, you know, most times it would be my coach telling me like, yeah, I had a fight for you, but I pulled you out because I just didn't think you were in the best kind of way. And I'm like secretly fist pumping, right? So it was just to be welcomed into that family was the most, I don't need drugs anymore kind of thing. You know what
you
mean?
You found something that you were looking for.
Yeah. Yeah. It was like, I don't need to go get an adrenaline rush and pretend to myself that I could eventually fight Muay Thai, or get an adrenaline rush and pretend there's a guy on the other side of the door or this or that. I can actually go to the gym with my family. I can train And then, you know what I mean? I had the beautiful thing where I fell in love with Muay Thai so much. If I get the urge, like if I used to get the urge to smoke crack or want to escape or get this weird urge, because all it takes for a drug addict is to get a smell, a scent, a happy feeling, a sad feeling, a overwhelming feeling. All it takes is something different to shock your system. And then it's an excuse. It's an excuse to go celebrate, to go mourn, to go be in self-pity, to go be in self-celebration, whatever it be. And then I started, whenever I found that feeling, I was like, I'm going to do something for Muay Thai. I'm going to shadow box now. And all of a sudden I'd forget about the fact that I just wanted to smoke crack. I'd forget about the fact that I was just thinking about a crack pipe. I'd forget it. And I'd think like, this is crazy that I actually does this. This is nuts. I actually fight Muay Thai. So now instead of spending the rest of the night debating on how I'm going to pick up, where I'm going to get the money from, where I'm going to get the utensils to use the drugs from, how much I'm going to get, how much I'm going to do, it's like, how many slow kicks am I going to do? How many combinations should I work on? Should I stretch? Should I do this? Should I do that? Oh, all of a sudden I'm tired. I'm going to bed. And I just got through, you know, it could have been staying up for 5 days and, you know, my mom just being horrifically scared and wondering where I am and if I'm okay and if anybody's seen me, to a point of talking to my mom being like, yeah, things are going great. Just like that. And it's because I found Muay Thai, and AA did bring me to Muay Thai. You know what I mean? That's why.
Thank you for sharing that. That's been amazing. So I want to touch, because I know you also became plant-based and fully vegan. So do you want to touch base on that? Like, how long has that been? I'm really curious to hear about that side of things and how that has helped you with your fighting.
Yeah, it's helped tremendously, because you know what? I was opposite of a vegan, you know what? In every type of way whatsoever. Like back when Cassie like was telling me about the benefits of being vegan and stuff like that, she would be like, you know, we should have a supper together. Let me make you supper. I would secretly go eat McDonald's before, or like just like I'd be like, I gotta be full from this before. And in August is when I turned full vegan.
So August 2019, when we moved to Edmonton together.
August. So we were coming up on a year here soon. Yeah. And the funny thing is, like I mentioned to Cassie, I said, like, not once have I even slipped up from That's being amazing. Vegan. Or not once have I relapsed. And to think, like, all the times of, like, being like, okay, yeah. So I'm going full in recovery, and I'm never touching drugs or alcohol again. And like, it's so much harder to get drugs, and it's so much harder to relapse than it is on, you know, from being vegan and to go to eat meat or to eat a dairy product, a chocolate bar or something like that. It's so easy to whip into the gas station, grab a chocolate bar and not tell anybody about it.
So what made you switch then?
So I watched the movie Game Changers.
Yeah.
I brought him. Movie. The documentary was actually screening at a movie theater here in Edmonton in September.
So I was there too.
Were you? Oh, yeah. That's crazy. Yeah. So we went. I made him come with me.
Yeah. So it was strictly for athletic purposes, right? I was seeing this, and I'm 35 years old, and I was seeing these athletes of a bit of an older age still competing as like at 20-year-old levels and winning Olympic gold medals and this and that, and strong men with so much muscles talking about like, you don't need muscles, you don't need to eat meat to get muscle and to get strong. Have you ever seen an ox eat meat, right?
Right.
How do you get strong? How can you get strong as an ox, right? Well, have you ever seen an ox eat meat is what Buddy said.
I love that line.
Yeah, that's awesome. So that's how it strictly started. I was like, nope, I want my joints to be fluent. I want to be longer lasting. I want to have a better gas tank. I want to be a better fighter. I want to be more limber. I'm going full vegan. I'm not even touching dairy. And then it turned into animal rights. And you know what I mean? Really caring for animals and seeing what's going on in the world for pleasure. Mm-hmm. Right? From what I started to stand, I was like, well, in that case, you know what I mean? It's just for a bit of taste. People are going through this, and I'm thinking about, like, I'm just thinking about all the horrific things that goes on with the transportation of animals, this and that. And then you get to the point where you're like, well, what does little old me make a difference for? Because I'm not going to get a milkshake in the gas station for. It makes a huge difference because it's for what I stand for now, right?
Yeah.
So it's nothing to do with what's going on and all the changes that it could possibly make. It's to do with that, like, so am I really going to stand for this by eating a piece of candy because it got gelatin in it? So how far do I need to go, right? And then I'm like, well, I need to go that far because what's the difference for me, right? If I'm not going to take a drink of milk, I'm not going to eat a candy with a bit of gelatin in it. And it got to that point where I stood strong for my word, and I was like, yeah, I can't believe I ever would think about animals in the way I used to. You know what I mean? Or not think about animals.
Right.
And right. The environment and everything that's going on in the world. You know what I mean? So it's just, and I find it made me a better person because of it.
I feel like once you, because I went through a similar journey as you, once you realize that you can be completely healthy, actually healthier eating plant-based, then all your barriers kind of just like start falling down. And then you're more open to learning about the animal side. And I think that similar thing happened with you once you realized, oh, you watch Game Changers and you're like, I can be healthy. Like I can be even better than what I am without eating meat. And then your barriers are down. You're more open to learning. And then you just keep learning more and more. And I feel like once you're already convinced on one side, whichever of the three pillars of veganism, like it could be health, it could be animals, it could be environment, whichever, if you're convinced about one, it just opens your door to the rest of the two.
Yeah, that was my experience as well. You're just kind of not in denial anymore. It's not a normal thing and it's not necessary. So you start questioning why you do it in the first place.
Yeah. Also, it's like the thing is, too, is I got to I don't know if I would have been able to stay vegan if I decided this on my own, if I wasn't with Cassie, because she makes all these wicked meals like macaroni and cheese and chili fries and cheese on top with the everything they got out of today's age, man. There's no reason to not be fully plant-based.
You can make anything vegan.
Anything. Yeah. There's, anything I just, vegan. Today I had burger and fries from A&W.
Yeah, because you can totally do that.
Yeah, yeah, I had that today.
Yeah. Okay, that's really cool. So you mentioned the reasons you wanted to go vegan. Now that since you have been plant-based / vegan, have you seen all those things? Like what benefits have you seen?
I've seen such a change in my body. I've seen such a change in my mind. I really have. Like I feel like it's helping me learn better. It's helping me progress through situations better that normally I just honestly feel like, being clouded with all this meat and ingestion and stuff like that, it clouded my brain and it clouded my thought choice. So I honestly think when I turned vegan, made it easier to stay clean, stay off drugs, because in the addition of when I became vegan, my brain was working better. So I had ADHD, my life wasn't under control. And then I got on a medication. I went and seen the doctor and it changed my life really. And I think the reason why I went and got on that medication is because my brain and my body wanted to be better because it already felt better from the veganism. So how can I be even better? Well, I can't keep track of myself because I'm friggin' mesmerized. So I should probably go see a doctor and see what he got to say. And then I got on a prescription and then it really changed my life. And I believe that my life is all changed because of the plant-based diet, moving up forward to the prescription, moving forward to Muay Thai, moving forward to feeling younger, feeling like I'm just getting started in my fight career when most fighters have retired before 3-4 years before I am right now.
That's amazing. I love that. That's pretty cool. Cassie, should we ask Tyler the three questions?
That's what I was thinking.
Do you want to do the honors for the first one?
I'll ask the first one here. So what is your favorite plant-based meal or vegan meal? Like
chili fries with cheese.
Yeah. You're pretty sure about that.
Yeah, chili fries with cheese. Only Cassie knows how to make it, so.
Cassie, when I'm back in Edmonton, you're inviting me over because I want to try these.
Yes.
Deal. Yeah. And I'll say, we have become experts at Like I'm more of a whole food plant-based vegan, but me Tyler too. Is definitely a, at times, not all the time, but a hardcore junk food vegan.
So oh yeah.
We've gotten pretty good at reading the ingredients and figuring out which Oreos and which candies are vegan. So.
Okay. That's pretty cool. Okay, Tyler, second question. What is one kitchen item you would not be able to live without?
Crackers.
He answered that as fast as I said bananas in the first episode.
He eats so many crackers. It's insane.
Crackers.
Yeah. That's awesome.
And then the final question here, just to finish off, is what advice would you have for any listeners who might be struggling with their own addictions or are maybe in active recovery but still kind of struggling?
What would I would say my suggestion to that would be find your path and find it for yourself, and don't let anybody tell you there's only one way and there's only this and only that, and don't continuously do something that's not working. If you're continuously going to rehab, if you're continuously struggling and this is all happening on a continuous rate, because unfortunately Alberta is so awesome and it gives us this great crutch to lean on for addicts, as in detox centers and rehabilitation centers. But then sometimes we come to lean on them so much that it's like, it doesn't matter if I go out and go totally rock bottom and end up in the streets, because I could just check myself into rehab. So I'd say, rather than leaning on a crutch, step on a stool, or step up and stand up and don't lean on nothing, and try and get yourself moving forward in a way that you find for yourself and only yourself.
I love that.
So thank you.
Where can our listeners reach you if they want to connect with you? Like, would you like to share your Instagram, your Twitter, like whatever, like, you would like to share?
Like, maybe if someone's heard your story and they really resonated with them and then they want to maybe reach out or ask you a question, is
my Instagram.
Instagram?
Yeah. Okay, we'll put your handle in the description so people can find it.
Awesome.
Yeah, well, thank you so much, Tyler. This was a beautiful story. I am inspired by your story, and Cassie obviously has been inspired. She's known you for a long time. Thank you, Cassie, for introducing me to Tyler, and I hope the listeners love this episode.
Yeah, let us know what you think. And thanks again, Tyler. It's been great.
Thank you guys so much. It's been an honor.
Hey guys, thank you so much for listening to the Plant Prescription Podcast. We really hope you enjoyed it, and hopefully this inspires you to take steps towards making changes so you live a longer, happier, and healthier life.
You can also follow us on Instagram, where we share nutrition, health, and fitness content along with recipes. Our Instagram handles can be found in the description of this episode. Please make sure to subscribe so you don't miss on any upcoming episodes. If you enjoyed this, we would love it if you left us a positive review and a 5-star rating on Apple Podcasts. Please also make sure to share this with any family or friends who may benefit. Thank you so much for listening.
Also, be sure to eat plenty of plants, and see you next week.